It's a pleasure to be here. This is our opportunity to talk to you about the journey that we've been on. And our journey is not just about the building, it's about what's taking place inside it. And I'm delighted I've got two people to share this presentation with me this morning. Alex Gailey, who's Key Stage 4 coordinator at Bristol Brunel, and Claire Rammelkamp, who is a Year 11 student at the school. And they're going to come up on the platform and give some of their observations about the experience that they've had. This has been a quite remarkable journey. And what I thought we'd do in our 35 minutes this morning is to share some of that with you. Yes, to talk about the building, because that's the focus of what you're here for today. But those of you working in schools will know that the building never sits any exams. It's the people inside it that do that. And the improvement that we've seen at Bristol Brunel has been a result, I think, of a focus on leadership, teaching and learning, and inclusion in its wider sense. So I'm going to make a relationship between both of those things over the course of this morning. We started working as a partnership of two academies, John Cabot Academy and Bristol Brunel Academy, and I became executive principal of the two just over a year ago. And both schools were starting from different contexts, but the thing that bound them together was that we serve the same part of the city, but also that we're on the same part of a journey, which is to improve and to make sure that we try to give the students that come to our two schools the best possible opportunity of success. The opening of Bristol Brunel Academy has created a major regeneration of our part of the city. Many people have likened it to a spaceship landing on Mars, because actually the community deserves a spaceship. It deserves something which is iconic and deserves something which gives them the confidence that people within Bristol and outside Bristol really believe in them. And as a partnership, it couldn't have been better. We've worked very closely with BSF, with Partnership for Schools, but we've also worked very closely with our partners in Bristol. And we wouldn't have got where we are today without the work of the partnership with the LEP and other colleagues that helped us to design and produce the building that we wanted them to help us to create. When we started the programme, we were looking to try to solve these problems, and we're making progress against all four of these. One was clearly about standards and performance, and we wanted Bristol Brunel Academy to be the best comprehensive school in the city, having been in recent years at the other end of that particular league table as the predecessor school, which was Speedwell Technology College. We wanted the school to be safe and secure, that students would come to school wanting to learn, would want to start earlier, end later, and that the relationships that we knew were there between adults and students in the school would flourish. And if we built the confidence of the community, then East Bristol, as a community in its own right, and it's a very interesting mix of people from different backgrounds and cultures, would embrace education. And one of the things I'm most proud of, there are two statistics which go alongside the GCSE results, which I think tell me that the journey that we're on is working. One is that a year ago, we started the Year 7s with only 93 students in the year group of 216, and 10 days ago when the new school year began, we increased that to 180. And those are families who previously lived in Bristol but were sending their children out of Bristol to be educated. And that's a major factor in what we're trying to do in the city. The other is that the predecessor school in 2006-07 was the highest excluding school in the authority, and the authority overall was towards the top end of that figure. And last year, there wasn't one permanent exclusion. And I make a direct link between that improvement and the way that the building has helped us to manage students and young people around the school. We wanted the building to achieve some of these things. There was a very, very credible piece of visionary work that was done around about 2002-2003 that talked about what we wanted the buildings to look like. And we took it one stage further, because we talked about the outstanding environment and we talked about how that environment would impact upon results. But we also wanted that the building would enable us to remodel it in the future. If you're working in a challenging environment, the curriculum that you envisage for your school is probably not the one that you're delivering now. And we're very much in that camp. The curriculum that we have ambitious plans to implement over the next 2 or 3 years, it would not have been the right stage for us to have done that a year ago. And we want to make sure that the building can be adaptable when we decide to do that. We also want to think about the legacy that the building leaves, that in 20, 30 years' time, students are still going to a building that has a wow factor and enables the leaders of the school in that time to be creative about the kind of curriculum it delivers, rather than being straitjacketed by a decision that was taken now. We have a major thrust around personalised learning and independent learning, so we wanted there to be areas of the school building which were not classroom-based, that were equipped. You could possibly teach maybe 60 or 70 youngsters in one go, or 3 or 4, depending upon the type of learning that you wanted to take place. And I also wanted it to be as far away from the school that I went to. I went to a comprehensive school in Cardiff in 1971, and my school had been built the year before, 1970. But by 1975, it looked like all the other schools in the city that had been almost 100 years old. That's not something that we wanted to recreate. You start with an educational vision, but an educational vision will change. 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been discussing vocational education and diplomas in schools in the way that we're doing now. So the educational vision is really a snapshot of a moment in time, and it evolves and it emerges as you engage young people, their parents, and the support staff and teaching profession in what that looks like. We wanted to have a heavy focus upon inclusion. Claire will talk to you in a moment, and the video that we'll show at the end. The students will talk very eloquently about some of the fears that they had about being based in the old building. And it was not an inclusive environment. Now I believe it is, and the building has helped us to do that. The things that get in the way of that vision are the out-of-date visions, that we tried that 10 years ago and it didn't work then. This has to be some really positive attitudes from everybody that's involved in it. This has to be blue sky thinking with a bottom line of reality. There are certain things you can and can't do within a school context, and that journey might take 25 years, but you need to think about what does the child that comes in year seven, what kind of experience will they have had by the time they've done their GCSEs or hopefully go into the sixth form and start that. We wanted a culture that was more about compliance and less about compliance and control and much more about confidence and creativity. And we wanted to move away from the schooling model that was still about one size fits all, both in terms of its curriculum map, but in terms of the kind of experience that the students had. Whenever I've had the opportunity to talk to audiences like yourselves about the experiences, I've described Brunel as the most intelligent building that I've worked in. And I've been around the country and seen several, probably not as many as you may have done in the audience, but we looked a lot in the last 2.5 years and tried to learn from the experiences that were there. And I think one of the reasons why it's been so powerful in terms of managing youngsters is to do with that second bullet on the left-hand side. If you ask young people what they want in terms of a vision of a school, the likelihood that you'll get, and I'll be very generic here, but the likelihood is you want dance studios, skateboard parks, swimming pools, because their experience is quite narrow. They've probably been to maybe one primary school and perhaps have only one experience of secondary. So their thoughts about learning spaces are not developed. What students will tell you that they want are some of those things about the place being safe, about being able to see teachers and teachers to see them, that passive supervision that comes from high visibility, no dark corners, no hiding holes when one student can do something unpleasant to another. We have open plan toilets, which are unisex at Bristol Brunel. That's not as horrendous as I've just said that. The cubicles have doors on. But actually the entrance point to them and the wash basins are all open plan. And they're situated next to some of the office hubs, so there's supervision from teachers there. And that, I think, has made a massive improvement to the culture of that particular part of our school. We've got adult and student spaces integrated. So you will see students and adults working alongside, doing their own work individually. But I think that's a really powerful statement, that you've got teachers getting on with their preparation and planning while students are doing their coursework alongside them. And we've described the school, and I'll show you some photographs in a moment, that it's a bit like an educational shopping mall. In our part of the country, just off the M5, we've got a shopping mall called Cribbs Causeway, and I know there's many of them around like it around the country. And when the school was being built, it looked like that. Before you put all the furniture and fittings in, what we had was long corridors with units, which are now obviously learning spaces, very similar to a shopping mall. And that's the kind of ethos that we've got there. That it feels a little bit like you've got the ability to walk around in the space, enjoy the natural light and colour, but actually within about 20 paces you're into a learning environment. And again, that is something I think which has been really powerful for us. The concept was about wide corridors. One of the challenges in the previous school was children ran everywhere, and there were lots of collisions, lots of noise, lots of excitable chatter as kids went round corners. We've got lots of straight lines in the building, and because the corridors are so wide, children don't need to run anymore. They can get there just as quickly by walking. That, again, has helped to calm the way that the building is working. The wide staircases that we have are in the heart of the building, not at the ends of the corridors. So if you're a child and that 50 metres away there's a staircase, the temptation to run to it is massive. If it's about 10, 20 metres away, if you're in the middle of the corridor, that's a very different issue. And we wanted it to be colourful, and we wanted it to have a lot of natural light. This is a photograph taken from the ground floor. So if you imagine that without the cladding on it, there's my sort of model of what a shopping mall might have looked like in an educational context, coupled to the Hogwarts staircase, as we sometimes call it. But if you stand at that particular point where that photograph's been taken from, you can pretty much see about 75% of the school, because our building is self-contained. Even the sporting facilities are inside the building, so children don't have to get changed, go out in the rain and the cold before they go back into the sports hall. They can do that from within the building, and that's a really positive message to give to young people, I think. Let me introduce next my two colleagues who have come with me today. Come on, guys, it's not that bad. This is Alex, who's Key Stage 4 coordinator, and this is Claire, who is one of our Year 11 students. And they're going to talk to you a little bit about their experiences having been through this programme and having been in the predecessor school over the last couple of years.
Thank you. The previous school was one of disrepair and despair. We had a lot of staff who felt neglected. It was a run-down building, broken windows boarded up, classrooms which could not be used for teaching in. We had inadequate facilities, a sense of neglect, as I've said, a target for vandalism and graffiti, not just during the school time, but outside the weekends, students would come back and try and target the school. We had no-go zones within the school, areas where staff were reluctant to cover while on duty, so break time and lunchtime duties, staff actually feared to walk in certain parts of the school. We had a poor reputation with the local community, and it was a school which was perceived as an unlucky choice to have to attend. The new building, completely different. It's modern, it's clean, it has, as David said, the wow factor. We've got academy status and a new ethos, an environment which is happy, secure and friendly. We welcome visitors and new students. All areas are easily accessed with clear visibility from any area in the building, and there are no blind spots. Students and staff feel safe. We no longer have the graffiti and the vandalism. No areas are off limits. Parents' involvement and consultation on the new building. We had the local community engaging with the school, welcomed to visit and look at the facilities during the school day. The background on the people. Previously, we had 4 head teachers in 5 years, which was very difficult for morale for staff and for the students. Low morale in staff leading to, as I said, disengagement. Staff were unsure where the school was going or how it would raise standards. Absenteeism was high, both for staff and students, with large numbers of supply staff. Students just didn't know who was going to be teaching them on what day. Little support was given to the teachers in achieving and supporting students. A student's approach towards learning was poor and leading to low achievement and expectations. Students were not enthusiastic about learning and intended to leave school at the earliest possible opportunity. Very high exclusion rates, with little involvement from parents, and one of the lowest performing schools in Bristol. Since BBA opened, we've improved staff morale. Staff are keen, enthusiastic, and proud to teach. New improved leadership and management. We've raised aspirations and expectations of students. We've implemented strategies to accelerate students' progress and raise standards. Relationships between staff and students are good. A sense of community involving people and valuing their contributions. The Student Council, which we've set up, is involved in the decision-making across the school, interviewing staff and discussing the curriculum. Students are supported on an individual basis, tailoring their educational needs. Truancy and absenteeism has fallen. Students now want to be in school and in the classroom. In fact, we've got now a large amount of students who stay behind after school and want to stay and work on. We have no external exclusions. Parents are enthusiastic about the school and wanting to be involved. And most importantly, primary school students are now enthusiastic about joining BBA.
That, for me, is a really important part of our journey. There's no doubt in my mind that the new building has helped us on that, and I doubt if we'd have made the progress so quickly without it. But that story, that description from a colleague who's worked at the previous school and can now see how it's working now, I think gives a really significant message about the journey that we're on. Student voice and student engagement is really key to this, and I'm sure those of you that are involved in this process will have thought through that. And one of the reasons why I asked Claire to come with us today to talk through is that Claire was instrumental in some of the decisions that the student voice group took when she was in year 8 and year 9, I guess it must have been now, about that time, and still plays a big part in the school today. So Claire's going to reflect on her experiences, and she's going to tell you about something called Our Wall of Wishes, which on the front cover of the flyer for this conference, you will have seen one of our students jumping in the air with some messages behind, which we'll show you that photograph in a minute. But first of all, Claire.
Some might describe Bristol Brunel Academy as a phoenix rising from the ashes of Speedwell Technology College. When I first started STC, I was fully aware of its reputation. The city's local press had branded it the worst school in Bristol. Although from my first day of Year 7, I found the school to be full of friendly students and dedicated staff, the stigma of attending a named and shamed school constantly hung over me. The portrayal of Speedwell in our local newspaper was unfair, but not completely without foundation. On two occasions, there were riots when police were called in, and we had to be sent home. The school's exam results were at the bottom of the league table, and the building itself was depressingly dilapidated and strewn with litter. The phrase problem school was used time and time again, and the general view of the students was that we were threatening troublemakers. The problem was that after being labelled the worst school in Bristol, the students had lost their pride. We just needed the opportunity for a fresh start. That opportunity came in September 2007, when Bristol Brunel Academy was opened. The building was incredible, light, open and clean, and immediately the atmosphere within the school was different. Though many people had complaints about the new uniform, as the blazer and tie were much more formal than the Speedwell polo shirts we were used to, everyone had to admit that we looked smarter. The students seemed to have a new attitude to learning, as the building was such a fantastic environment, and the entire school seemed to be making an effort to achieve. Without the constant stream of negativity from the press and local people, we felt that we could really be proud of our school and of ourselves. As this was the school's first year of exam results, everyone was eager to prove that the new school had made a difference, and the result was fantastic. The Year 11s achieved 62% A star to C, and Bristol Brunel Academy came eighth in the league table. This first year has made such a difference. It's not just a new building, it's an entirely new school. Building Bristol Brunel Academy was the first step, but it's the people who make a school what it is. We just needed a chance to prove ourselves, and I think we have.
Keep going.
With the construction of the new school came the amazing opportunity to really make it a unique space. So my friends and I were thrilled when the school offered us the chance to design a piece of public art for the new building. Emily Winstanley, Ashara Rosser, Ross Smeal, Max Morris and myself were asked to form the commissioning group, and working with the company Creative Partnerships, we scoured the internet for an artist who would help us to achieve our ideas. We eventually decided on an art form called Why Not Associates, and after meeting the two artists who would be working with us, we knew we'd made the right choice. During one public art meeting, our principal, Mr. DiFinizio, told us that he would like the art to focus on aspirations for the future to reflect the ethos of the new school. The idea that immediately entered my mind was that wishes would tie in perfectly with this theme, and I thought that a wall displaying the wishes of the entire student body would provide everyone with a chance to contribute to the new building and leave a lasting legacy, as well as enable them to visit the school in years to come and see if their wishes and dreams for the future had indeed been fulfilled. My inspiration for the Wall of Wishes actually came from an Audrey Hepburn film, The Roman Holiday, in which Audrey visits a wall covered in marble plaques, each one inscribed with a wish that had already been fulfilled. The image of hundreds of wishes engraved in stone had really made an impression on me, and after the rest of the public art group had watched this part of the film, we decided to go ahead with the idea, the only difference being that our wall would consist of wishes for the future. We really wanted to give every student in the school an opportunity to get involved with the project, so with a rapidly approaching deadline, we gave a presentation inviting them all to submit their wishes. The response we received was absolutely fantastic. We were all amazed at the variety of wishes given in. A huge number of people submitted very profound wishes, such as, I wish I could invent a cure for cancer, or I wish for world peace. The rest of the wishes ranged from the sentimental to the utterly bizarre. One student wished to make their family proud. Another student wished they could eat toenails. Something which surprised us all was the lengthy design process. Every minute detail had to be considered, from the arrangement of the marble plaques to the exact shade of grey we would use for the text. It took us 2 weeks to decide on the final arrangement, which we described as higgledy-piggledy. None of us had realised how much time and effort went into a project of this kind, from the initial idea to the finished product, but it was all worthwhile. We pitched our idea to Skanska, the company contracted to build the school, and we were ecstatic when it was approved. Walking through the double doors on the first day of term, we witnessed our fellow students' amazed expressions at finding their wishes set in stone for everyone to see. It was an incredible moment. So much thought had gone into each wish. When Gordon Brown officially opened Bristol Brunel Academy in September 2007, it felt fantastic to show him the finished wall of wishes. There was one student's wish which particularly caught his eye. I wish to become Prime Minister.
That's it, okay. And she left that message hanging. Maybe it should die. Maybe that message might be changed to wish to remain Prime Minister as of now, but that's out of our league, I'm afraid. I've always said that the success of the school will be down to the ambassadorial work of the staff and the students, and in Alex and Claire this morning, you've seen a living embodiment of that. Thank you both very much indeed. To wrap up then, one of the messages that's coming through from what you've heard my colleagues and I say this morning is that we are now a very confident school. This is a school where people are proud to work, proud to learn, and proud to talk about it in the community. Here's another example of how some of that works. We have what we call breakout spaces, which is always quite curious to me because it implies you're breaking away from something. I prefer to call it a break-in space, but nevertheless it'll do for the moment, where we have spaces which are not necessarily timetable, but enable teachers and students to work in smaller groups to promote our vision of independent learning and personalisation. And as the school grows in confidence, as the curriculum evolves over the next few years, we'll see more of these spaces being used across the school. You need high visibility for a number of reasons. The confidence that Claire described there about how students now feel about the school, that Alex talked about as a member of staff, it requires that level of confidence and safety and security. And some of the ways through which you do that are about being able to see what's going on in your building. I like the fact that when students are being mentored and coached by a member of staff, other children can see that happening. I quite like the idea that if a child is being told off for something they've done wrong, that other students see that taking place. There was a perception in the old school that the naughtier you were, the more rewards you got as an incentive to try to improve. And the students like Claire, who got it right most days, very rarely got those treats. So we wanted the accountability of young people to be very, very clear in that way. That's an example of one of our office hubs, which you'll see at the end of either floor. We've moved away from the idea that you get an office automatically because you've got a job title. That's quite a challenge in our profession, but it's one that I think that we begin to win over. And as a result of it, people work better in teams. But if you're a member of staff sitting at one of those machines and there's an incident taking place on that balcony, you have to be professionally negligent not to want to do something about it. So that degree of passive supervision that comes from the fact that you can see more than you saw before really helps us in that way. The systems within it are very important, and I won't labour these because this is possibly for another conversation or another conference another time, but I do want to stress the fact that actually the leadership of the school is really important. You'll have heard Claire talk about Amanda DiFinizio, who's the principal of the school, and my role of executive principal is to work across the two and soon to be three academies in the city to look at how we strategically develop the quality of learning. But he and his leadership team, of which I'm proud to be a member, have done a lot of work about thinking what the school day looks like, how we organise things like lunchtimes, how we use our support staff, how we think about the times of the start and the ends of the day to try to get us to a position where it makes a real difference. You've heard from us this morning about how this transformation has started, and please don't get the impression that we think this journey is over, because it isn't. We are at the beginning of a journey, and there's a long way still to go. We have a fantastic opportunity from the building and the exam results we got this summer to build upon that, but the next 5% on the exam results will be as hard, if not harder, than the improvements that we made over the course of the last year. And here's our ultimate test. This summer, 62% of the grades were 5A to C's, and 35%, as Tim mentioned earlier, were English and Maths. And that's coming up from a position where a year ago that was 30 and 19, and the year before that it was 20 and 11. So in two academic years, we've almost trebled the results. And that's about good teaching, it's about good learning, and it's about high-quality leadership. But I'll tell you that the building itself doesn't half make a difference to that. And my final point would be this. These are some of the buildings I've been privileged to visit. The Emirates Stadium, not that I'm an Arsenal fan, but it's a fantastic stadium. The Lord's Cricket Ground Media Centre, Eden Project, Gaudi's Cathedral in Barcelona. There's no pressure if you're a designer to imitate that. The Holocaust Memorial in Philadelphia, High Tech High in San Diego, the New Tate, the Millennium Centre in Cardiff, or even at Bristol on our doorstep. These are iconic buildings housing iconic work. And I suppose my message would be that those people involved in designing schools, people like myself whose career has been inside the buildings trying to improve the quality of student learning, working now closer more than ever with architects and designers, don't build the school that we went to. This is, I think, the one opportunity in our professional lifetimes that we'll get this right. I don't think we'll see investment in my lifetime like this again. And I would hate to think that my grandchildren will go to a school in 25 or 30 years' time, says he ambitiously, won't be as long as that, will it? Maybe a bit less than that, that actually is no longer fit for purpose, as my school was within a very short space of time. To finish with, we have a short video clip. I'd love to have brought about 20 students with us this morning, but that was impractical, and Claire represented them very well, as Alex did the teaching staff. But we'd like to finish with showing you some of our students and their observations of the old and the new. So my thanks to Claire and Alex. Thank you very much for listening.